Ben Braun joins us on Sports Byline. He spent 37 years as a college head coach at schools like Cal, Rice, and Eastern Michigan, and he was the Pac-10 Coach of the Year and three times named Mid-American Coach of the Year, and he played his college basketball at Wisconsin. You know, Ben, I've known you for a long time, but before we talk some basketball, tell me about growing up and also about your dad, Zev, who was an Academy Award-nominated producer. When I saw that note, my eyes got big. Tell me a little bit
about
that.
Well, you're funny, Ron. I just got off the phone with my dad. He's turning 90 this year. He's in L.A. I'll be visiting him next week. But he's always given me good advice, and one of the things he's told me through the years is follow your passion. So while a lot of my relatives and close family members went into medicine and other areas, lawyers and business, and he was a businessman too, his passion was movies. So he went into to movies and created quite a uproar in the family, but that's what he wanted to do, and he's done it for 50-plus years. In fact, he just did, a year ago at age 88, he just did the Gabby Douglas story. Her family chose my dad to do that, and that was a big deal. So, you know, growing up in Chicago area, he wasn't a big sports guy, but he always encouraged me, and if that was my passion, which it was, he encouraged me to follow my passion. So I've followed as a basketball, baseball player and coach. I went into those areas, and he's been supportive all through the years.
Tell me about the creative process. What did he tell you about that?
Well, that's a great question, Ron. You know, what he's done is it's really involves relationships too. You know, if you're going to be a creator, you're going to invent, you're going to do things, it's collaborative. You can't do things on your own. I don't care how smart you are. You need to have a team. You need to be part of a team. Either you're going to direct that team. He has a famous saying, although he didn't invent it. He said, look, either lead, follow, or get out of the way. And that's saying it nicely without the expletives in there. You know, you get the heck out of the way. And so everybody has a role to do. But I've always felt, you know, I always had leadership in my bones. I was the oldest in my family. I kind of bossed my kid brothers around. But I always picked the teams. I always played with kids older than me. And I really enjoyed that. So I always knew that coaching somehow would be in my blood. I enjoyed putting a team together, the challenge of making that team the best team and what goes into making a team. That's, you know, you can write books on that.
I've always had a saying, I don't care if you fail, I care if you don't try. And it's something that's very interesting when you apply it to coaching because it's so definitive. You either win or you lose. And I'm just wondering, when you think about that question, how did it apply to you as far as developing as a coach?
Well, you know, Pete Newell was a big influence on me, and we became just the closest of friends when I was at Cal. And coaching is teaching, but Pete always had that in mind. We talked about the importance of what coaching and what that really was, and trying. And he had a funny saying. He used to kid my players. One of my best players, Sean Lampley, he said, "Sean, don't let coach get on you about defense." And I'm going, "Oh, Pete, why would you do that? Trying to get this kid to play defense for years." He said, "Sean, don't let anybody tell you you can't play defense." He says, "You know why?" And Sean said, why? And Pete says, "Because you never tried." You know, his point was you have to try, you have to put effort in. And I think you can be good at anything you want if you first start with effort. And you have no shot unless you're the most talented person in the world, and you're still going to fall short of your goals. But you've got to really put effort in. And effort, you start there. I've always did that as a recruiting a mandate for myself and my assistants. If somebody had great work ethic and a great passion for what they did, I had a chance. I spent some time with Steph Curry's dad, Dell, at one of Steph's camps, and I said, "You know, Dell, tell me what was it about Steph? You know, were you surprised about the level he's reached?" He says, "No, not that he was more talented than anybody." He said, "But he had a passion I couldn't control, and it was his passion and his ability to practice, his passion for the game and practice, that's made him the player he is today." So that's case in point, in my opinion.
It's interesting you bring that up because I think you're absolutely right. But I know in talking to my friends that were outstanding defensive players, particularly in the NBA, they all gave me the same answer when I said, "What's the key element to being successful playing defense?" Because everybody thinks about it in terms. And they all said attitude.
Well, you're right, Ron. And I grew up in Chicago, and I used to go. My dad used to take me to the Bulls games. We used to go in the locker room after the game, and I was friends with a lot of the Bulls players. They even came and watched me play high school basketball, Chet Walker, Jerry Sloan. And Jerry Sloan pulled me aside, and he said, "Ben, let me tell you something." He might even call me Benjamin. He was very strict. He said, "I'm not as good as these guys. You look around this locker room, I'm not as good as any of these guys, but," he said, "but that's why I have to play harder." And he did. And who played harder than Jerry Sloan? And he taught his players to play hard. So that was a great message that you start with that, and the rest I think you can pick up.
And he had the same attitude when he coached as well. He was pretty single-minded, as I remember.
Oh, boy. He was the best defender that I've ever seen. Took more charges than anybody. Was always in the right position. Broke his nose probably as many times as Jerry West did. That's a lot. And he just was as tough-minded, but his teams played that way, and they were hard-nosed. And he's a very underrated player and coach, in my opinion.
Yeah, before we move on and talk a little more basketball, I want to go back for just a second. You played your high school ball in the Chicago area. Was it with New Trier?
New Trier High School. We played in the same league as Evanston, Proviso East. It was a heck of a league, and we went to the inner city to play games. They broke that league up, but, I mean, we had to get out of town sometimes after a win. We didn't win many, but in the city, but when we beat those teams, you had to get out of there pretty quick. And it was tough sledding down there. It was a great league, but probably as good a league as there is in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, the reason I say that is I played high school basketball in Rantoul, Illinois.
I know Rantoul.
You know Rantoul?
Absolutely.
Chanute Air Force Base.
Absolutely.
My dad was there, you know.
Absolutely.
We would eventually venture up to the Chicago area to take on one of those schools and get our rear ends kicked up there.
Well, we were fortunate, and I was fortunate. You know, at New Trier, there were 3,500 students. Would have been 5,000 if they didn't have an East and West back then, but we played in a very competitive league. John Schneider was a legendary coach, won 800-plus games. I used to kid him, tell him if he'd let me shoot the ball more, he'd won 900, but he didn't buy that either. So really, we great area to grow up in, New Trier, great academic school, so I was very fortunate and blessed to be at that school.
You came out of college at Wisconsin with a teaching direction at that time. That's what you majored in,
right?
I believe. What was it like? What was your mindset coming out of Wisconsin as to what you wanted to do?
Well, teaching really enabled me to coach. You know, nobody back then got into coaching. I never took a PE course, not one. If you wanted to be a high school coach, you had to go and get your teaching degree. You had to be a teacher, and your coaching salary was maybe $500. The rest of your salary was for teaching. So I did that, and then at the request of my high school coach, I got a degree in also a master's degree in guidance and counseling, which would help me in terms of coaching. But I really felt that that was the best way to go about coaching. I was coaching high school and being a teacher. Again, as I mentioned, that was Pete Newell's calling. If you want to be a really good coach, you have to be a great teacher. Teaching is what coaching is. There's no substitute for teaching. If you can't teach, you really can't coach.
Do you think it's still viewed that way?
I don't know. You know, a lot of people can accumulate good players, and if their teams are good enough and more talented, you know, you can not play well and win, and you can not coach well and win if your team's got more talent, but it won't last, Ron. It's that's the key about coaching. I've always felt and prided myself and my teams on, you know, did your teams, how are they consistently over the years? And I thought our teams were pretty consistent, and it was, that was important, that our teams maintained a certain level. And to do that, you have to really teach. You have to have your players improving. We were able to do that, and that was a challenge I thought that I always had as a coach. How do we get our players better? How do we get them to be team-oriented and have great chemistry? Those were the you know, that's teaching. That's having relationships.
We have about 2 minutes before we have to break. Tell me a little bit about the atmosphere of coaching basketball when you first got into the business, because you were at the high school level, and then you worked your way up. I mean, it's such a big business today, but what was it like when you got into
it? I never thought at all about coaching in college, and then I got a coaching offer to coach college, and I said, well, the athletic director said, look, you can always go back to high school, but you can't, you know, it's hard to get into college coaching if that's something you want to do. Try the college, and I did, and then I didn't realize until I got there that we were basically a school that had just turned co-educational, so I had to recruit in the dormitories. I had to give a sales pitch there. I had to drive the bus. I had to make the sandwiches, wash the uniforms. And so that's how you really learn the base level. If you really want to be a coach, I learned doing all the things back in the day that I think all coaches should do, because once you appreciate that, you appreciate what your assistants do. You don't depend on anybody. There's no job that's too big. You do everything. And so I was fortunate to grow up that way in coaching. And then as I progressed up the coaching ladder, that background really helped me. So being at a small level, starting in high school, going to a small level in college, going to mid-level Eastern Michigan, I always felt that helped me to become a better coach.
Yeah, I think it layered your career, did it not? Because the step wasn't a huge thing.
Not at all.
It was general.
Not at all. And I never tried to change the way I coached. I was always the same person. I thought, you know, that you had an obligation to make your players better. I always appreciated the parents who trusted me with their children. and their young men to coach. I never took that for granted. I thanked them, and I made sure I did as good a job, and our staff did as good a job as possible, because that's a big step when somebody entrusts you with their son or daughter.
Ben Braun is with us in the studio, 37 years a college basketball head coach at schools like Cal, where he was there for 12, Rice for 6, and Eastern Michigan for 11. And as I pointed out at the beginning, he was the Pac-10 Coach of the Year and 3 times named Mid-American Coach of the Year after playing his college ball at Wisconsin. He is also involved in a very special program now, which is more teaching, which he's most comfortable with. And we'll talk to him about that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show. Ben Braun is with us. We're talking college basketball because for 37 years he was a head college basketball coach at Cal, Rice, and Eastern Michigan. And Ben, I want to go back for just a second about the recruiting process and get into how that has evolved, because to me, that's the foundation. Every coach I talk to says, well, you can't do anything unless you got talent. I understand that, but there's a way to get that talent that I'm sure has changed a great deal over the years.
Well, you know, some coaches will go to great lengths to get a player, and I always felt that I was going to sell our program and myself and our coaches just for who we were. I wasn't going to make promises I couldn't keep, because once you make a promise, you can't keep. You've lost that player. You've lost that parent. So we were very straight. You know, we were, and I was able to, and our staff coached 24 guys that went in the NBA, but, you know, Ron, only one of them was an All-American. So I didn't make that promise to those kids. They earned that. The one that was an All-American probably was destined to be a pro player. But the other 23, you know, those are guys that got better on their own. So I felt that you know, when you're recruiting, you lay those, you know, the groundwork down, but you also are realistic. You just don't make promises. You say it's, you know, you tell players, you tell parents that the opportunity is there, but they've got to make use of that opportunity. And obviously education is a big part of it. I've been fortunate at every school that I've coached that we've had great academics. And that was important for me, that the players didn't just go to school for the basketball, because they were going to become one-dimensional if they got injured, which a number of them did. They weren't going to be able to go on and latch on to something. So where would you spend the time if there were, you know, if you weren't playing? Would that still be at the school that you're at? And I was fortunate to be at those types of schools.
You know, the problem, and I've talked about this before, and I don't know how candid you want to be on this subject, but I've always said that the people at the top at colleges and universities don't know whether the ball's stuffed or blown up.
I've used the same expression, you know, Ron, you're right. And but we're here down at, you know, at the grassroots level here. And if administrators and some of those people just knew how important it was, and the coaches that are guiding these young men and to represent not only your team and your university, but your community and themselves, that's important. Really is.
Well, let me go back for just a second to that, because coach gets hired to win basketball games. Depending upon the talent and other things that are going along with the college atmosphere, maybe you get the talent, maybe you don't get the talent. But what bothers me is there's an expectation, and I keep hearing student athlete, and I think that's wonderful. But if you don't have more W's than you have L's, it doesn't matter that you've been. You go ahead.
Ron, a funny story. At Eastern Michigan, we went to the Sweet 16. Of course, the administration, that's great, coach. They said, are we going to go to the Final Four next year? I said, no. I said, first of all, we've never been to an NCAA tournament at Eastern Michigan. I understand how important that is. Then we were nationally ranked and beat Duke in one of the tournaments. And then we were rated 18th and went to the Sweet 16. So the next year we lose all of our players, and I go into our athletic director's office and I asked him for a raise. We were, I think, 9-22. And he said, well, what do you mean a raise? You guys won 9 games. I said, well, the president of this university said that nothing was more important than academics, and we had like 6 academic All-Americans. These young men have matriculated. And he said that that's important, so I think I'm in for a raise. And he shook his head, and he said, well, you go see the president. I don't know if I can do that. And I went to see the president, and Ron, I'll be darned, the president didn't look me in the eye and said, you know, I did make that statement, and because of what I told you and because of my values at this university, we're giving you a raise. And so that was important. I don't know how many university presidents would do that today, Ron, but, you know, that's important. I wish more people had that perspective that, you know, that you're not going to win every year. You're not going to go to the championship. We went to the NCAA tournament in Cal, and I had an athletic director, administrator that said that, you know, going to the tournament wasn't enough. We had to win 2 or 3 games. And I said, you know, that's a bad message to tell the parents. It's a bad message to tell your alumni. It's a bad message to tell those young men that just earned that job, that trip to the tournament, that what they did wasn't enough. And, you know, I gotten a pretty good argument about that, and probably to my demise. But I just think that that's the wrong message. You don't make that type of statement. You are not going to go to the tournament every year. I don't care where you are. There might be injuries. We had injuries at Cal and lost our All-American player for a year. And so, you know, we didn't go. So we went to 8 tournaments in 11 years. That's pretty good. But the 3 years you go, you're not a failure, and your players aren't a failure. So I think it's important that administrators put this in perspective, and that that message is really, you know, emanated.
You know, Mike Krzyzewski is a good friend of mine, and I was down at the Duke campus, and I was talking to him doing the show down there. And I said, Mike, you've always had a reputation of not screwing up a kid when you get him into the program. And I said, so therefore, when you go in on a recruiting call, what is it that you look for? What is it that you do to try to make sure you made the right pick of not only a basketball player, but the person as well? He said, Ron, he says, whether it's a one adult family or two parents in that family, he says, I always make sure, well, I ask the family a question, and then out of the corner of my eye, I look to see whether the kid rolls his eyes as his parents are answering that question. I said, well, what does that tell you? He says, it tells me whether they respect their parents and that type of discipline.
I love that, Ron. I love that about Mike Krzyzewski, and he really does have that. You know, he's been able to recruit kids that are very selfless and that play for the team. And, you know, his rap for many years is Mike didn't have enough pros, but now he's getting them because some guys are pretty talented. But his teams, and I've coached against his team, you know, they're pretty special. And the way he's coached his program, the way he's recruited, the way he's recruited superstars, he did it in the Olympics, you know, you really gravitate towards what he does. He's built his reputation on reputation. And I've looked for those same types of things in visits, because if they don't respect their parents, they're not going to respect you and their teammates.
One of the things that has bothered me, and I've been very honest with it with the national and international audience, is that I think recruiting is a snake pit in sports across the board. And the reason I say that is that I've seen too many times a kid is recruited but is kind of run off.
Yeah.
If a coach needs to have somebody better at the power forward position, or they offer a scholarship to a kid, but at the last moment they were finally able to get that other kid, so they yank the scholarship back and the kid has nowhere to go. What the hell happened to recruiting and integrity?
Well, there's pressure, and I think the reason that a lot of coaches do that now is because their jobs are on the line. Ron, I've never worried about that. I'd rather lose my job and absolutely have coached that way than to treat a young man and his family that way. We had a young man that got injured and never played for us at Cal, and I said, look, we're going to honor your scholarship. We did, and that was a promise I made, and if a promise is made, it's kept. And I just never felt that you should do that at the expense of the young man or your team. And, there's been times you had to discipline players and you knew it would probably cost your team, but you knew you were doing the right thing for your players, and you do that. That's kind of the honor of coaching. If you're going to be a teacher and a coach, that's what you must do. And it's too bad that there are pressures today that, you know, I know coaches have to feed their families, but I think you also have the obligation to do what's right, do the right thing.
I also think the pressures are on the other side, on the athlete as well. There's so much social media that's available that when they're out there, they're hearing from their friends, they're hearing from family, hey, you're talented, you can get this, you can get that. How does a coach counter something like that?
Well, it's hard, but, you know, you're right. That's out there. It's out there all the time. You see that. You know, Ron, I've got another – we can talk about it in another segment perhaps, but I have a way I think you can really straighten up college basketball. I've mentioned this before, and I'll mention it here on your show. They should eliminate college basketball postseason tournaments in terms of conference tournaments. To me, it's a waste of time. It's for money. It's for sponsorship. You know, let's put everybody in the NCAA. You know, wouldn't that be great for parents and players that everybody had the ability to play in a postseason tournament? You would eliminate all the politics, which teams get in. Forget about who's playing in a big conference, who's playing in a small conference. If you did that, I think the coaches would be under less pressure that to save their jobs. They would be coaching kids in a different manner. I think administrators will look at the program differently. But imagine if you just started this tournament a week or two early, had everybody enter the tournament, kind of like the Indiana high school basketball tournament. You'd get a true champion. Give the team that wins your regular season conference a bye. Do something. Give them an advantage. But make that worth something right now. Right now, nobody knows who won the conference. It's not important. How did you do in the tournament? Everybody knows that. Who got in? Who didn't get in? So I just wish they'd make a change. They're talking about expanding the tournament. If you're going to expand it. Let everybody in, and I just think that's the way to eliminate some of these pressures.
We've got 90 seconds before we have to break again, Ben, and I'm just wondering about the ongoing conflict between academics and athletics on a college campus because trying to keep the athlete eligible, you know, and they have a lot of pressures with practice and everything else. Where is that today?
Well, I think it's, you know, the responsibility goes on the student athlete, but it must come from the coach and it must come from the family. And I think there should be an understanding. It's tough when you're only going to school for 1 year, because think about this, Ron. If you go to school for 1 year and you know you're a pro, you're probably only going to school for one semester, because the second semester you're going to play in combines, tryouts, and so you probably don't even need, once the season's over, a lot of these players don't even go to school. It makes a farce of the system. I really wish there'd be a change there. Either don't go to school and pursue pros, no problem with that, but if you're going to go to college, go there for the right reasons and use school, don't let it use you, and that's, to me, the best-case scenario. So I'm not sure what that exact model looks like, but you have to do that. And players, you know, don't understand how short their career can be. An injury can cut it short, but you really want to make sure that your school stands behind you.
In about 20 seconds, should the NBA be helpful, a little more helpful to the
colleges?
I think so.
I think we should just call it like it is. If you're going to be an NBA player, then you're an NBA player. If you're going to go to college, and go to college. It's right now we're kind of caught in between. The 1 year is kind of a tough model, a bad model. But, you know, you can't fault somebody turning a pro right out of high school, because I don't care what walk of life you're in. Some people are ready for it and some aren't.
Wonderful conversation with Ben Brano. When we come back, we'll talk about what he is doing right now with the AAU Oakland Soldiers program. This is a very important program. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline. Ben Braun has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. We've talked about the state of college athletics, particularly college basketball. But let's look ahead and talk about something that he's very involved in. It's the AAU Oakland Soldiers program. First of all, explain to everybody what that is.
Well, AAU basketball, Ron, is a level of basketball that's higher than high school. It's for the elite players, a lot of the elite players that can play and play against other programs around the country, so college scouts can see you. A lot of times college scouts can't see you with your high school. It's tougher there, but if you're on a team that travels and plays in tournaments during the summer, the AAU program can prepare you for that, so you can really be ready to play at the college level and get scholarship offers. But the AAU programs start all the way, Ron, from 9 and 10 years old up. And to me, the best programs I've witnessed, I was in Houston for 7 years, the Houston Hoops, and a friend of mine, you know, Steve Trauber, he developed that program with Justice Winslow since they were 9, 10 years old. That team stayed together and played all the way through, and there's advantage to that. It teaches you about loyalty. It teaches you about your younger stages of the program, developing the older programs. The Oakland Soldiers the same way. I've recruited from the Soldiers. Mark Olivier, who's now president, has been with the program for years. He asked me to coach there. They have programs all the way from 9 years old up, and they're even starting women's basketball now, girls' teams. So to be able to play at that level, they're starting. It's grassroots. You play. You travel with the team. You've got really good program coaches that coach you at the youth level and teach you fundamentals about being a good teammate and how you can develop your game. AAU gets a bad rap. There are many, many very positive AAU programs. Some, on the other hand, you know, are just there, you know, that maybe don't do the same things. But the Soldiers is an example. I think the L.A. Rockfish was another example. Dave Benezra, programs I'm familiar with and recruited from that developed their program at a young age, got the parents involved with those programs. Those parents stayed with those programs, and they played all through their career with those programs. And they got it, the exposure that really it took and the experience to become great college players and go on to play professional basketball. So I'm working with them now, Ron, and I'm coaching. I'm working with the coaches. I'm working with the young men in the programs. I'm talking on behalf of those players and parents to college coaches, trying to help them, you know, get the right exposure and offers that they can play at, you know, in the college level.
Are you concerned that the young player, high school player, young college player is simply looked upon as a commodity?
Well, sure. And what I'm trying to empower these young players to do is, you know, don't change who you are. Be the same person, but don't let basketball and this college recruiting use you. You know, put yourself in a position where you can have as many options as possible. If you do well in school academically, if you get your ACT, and we do this, Ron, we do ACT, SAT preparation, get yourself college eligible, get your grades and your test scores up so you can have as many options as you can. Go to an Ivy League school. Go to a school that's got top academics, or go to a school that's, you know, that's going to give you some options beyond basketball. So do all the things you have to do to put yourself in a position to choose from just not a limited amount of schools, but schools that you can benefit from. And that's important. You know, it's really important. We even do things for managers in our program. We're trying to do things to help train coaches, train players, And it's important that players, again, don't let basketball use them. They need to use basketball and that opportunity. Their gift is that they're talented, but they've got to also prepare themselves and find out, you know, what do college coaches look for? They look for players that can are good chemistry, glue guys. You don't have to be the best player on your team. I always recruited a player that wasn't their best player on their team, but they were going to be great team guys, great glue guys. They might be happy coming off the bench and being the best darn bench guy you've seen. And I always felt I had walk-ons that went on to start for me. I had walk-ons that went on to the NBA, Derek Dial, that walked on for me at Cal, played on a team that, you know, was a great player and was a super player. He was an NBA player. So don't let your dreams deter you, you know, but do the things along the way that train you to become good at not just, you know, the game, but other things around the game.
You know, to verify what you said, I remember talking to Al Addles. I always loved my conversations with Al, and I asked him, I said, Al, there were lots of playground legends. And I think about somebody like Helicopter Herman New York. There was a legend.
I knew him.
Why can't people like that with that much talent make it into pro basketball? And he looked at me and he said, because they could not play system basketball.
Well, and discipline. I agree with you. And that's a really – Al Addles is a genius. I've known Al for so many years. He was great to me during my coaching days at Cal. We used to practice at the Warriors facility. He'd always stop down, visit with the players, visit with me, and we still talk. But he was right about that. He's a tough guy, but he knew the discipline or the difference between being a tough guy and a disciplined guy and a system guy. You've got to take your toughness and you've got to take your abilities and you've got to you really got to coordinate that into a team setting. And that's what he did with his when he was coaching the Warriors and when he won his championship. And they had many different personalities, but discipline's very important and it's good in any walk of life. If you're not disciplined and you can't subject yourself to for the good of the program, good of the team, then your abilities really, you can throw them out the window. There's a lot of guys like that were so talented, but they couldn't seem to get that through on a team level. And if you want to be successful, you better be able to relate to other players, your coaching staff, and even the fans today. You've got to be somebody that the fans are going to enjoy coming out to watch you play.
I know that you were coaching the Oakland AAU Soldiers team, and they were going up against a Southern California team, a darn good one. And I know your quote is the one that jumped out at me as I read the story. You said it was great because your team came from behind,
yep,
and they won that game. And you said it was great. My happiness and exhilaration wasn't for me as a head coach. It was seeing the players' faces, the pride to say we beat this really good team. And I would suppose that that type of reaction and that type of effort and that type of reward probably has a lasting memory on these kids going forward.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, Ron, that's why I coach and that's why I teach is to see that exhilaration because, and I'll be involved in coaching, and it's never about me. And anytime I ever thought about me, I was a bad coach. When I thought about my team and my players, I was a better coach. But, you know, you think about that experience those players had, and they'll remember that. That'll help them in their next level experience when they get to college. They'll remember what it meant to prepare for a team that was very talented, stick to the game plan, not care about who gets the credit, have a great balance, and go and beat a very talented team. So if you can do that, you can really help your organization. I remember speaking, I was asked to speak to Procter & Gamble once, and they said, you know, could you talk to my organization, the head of Procter & Gamble, when I was coaching, and I said, what do you want me to talk about? Talk about teamwork and the value of that. And I said, you know, that's, I had to think about that, but my message to Procter & Gamble was, you could be a great salesman. You could be knocking them dead as a salesman, be the number one ranked salesman, but guess what? If you're the number one ranked salesman and your company goes down the drain, now you're the number one of what? A defunct company. So you have to be good at what you do, be individually motivated, but make sure that you're helping your organization get better. Otherwise, you've got nothing. And so that's kind of what this is about. I still to this day remember my players and how much joy they got. And they just won the Peach Jam, which is a hugely prestigious tournament. And they did that by playing team basketball, playing well together, and becoming national champs which in this tournament. So great moment for me, but great moment for these young men.
You mentioned something a little bit earlier about making sure that the kids use basketball, not basketball use them. And you've been very candid about the abuses that go on when it comes to the AAU program. You say, I'm not trying to take these players and ride them like a lot of young coaches. I see AAU coaches who say, follow me, and then they try to ride that player to their next job. You do what's right by the kid. That's the message I give to coaches and players. And in this day and age, the young players that I talk to, football players who say they go into the University of Michigan and they see 106,000 people in that stadium And they're not getting anything out of this except for maybe an education. But that's still, they look at it in terms of money. That's the way we judge things in this country. And I'm just wondering, if I were an athlete and somebody was going to the next level and using my talents to get to that next level, I'd be very cynical and very angry.
Well, that's my message to these young coaches now today and the young players. And it's not just AAU, Ron. It's even college coaches who talk about how many players they recruited. Well, you know what? They think that's going to get them their next job. What a mistake that is, because it's not about you. It's about you're not recruiting those players for you. You're recruiting those players so they can have some success. And, you know, a smart player will say, you know, who's really in there for me? And they're smart. Good, smart players know when coaches and staff members are there for them and their families and doing the right thing. You anytime a coach is, you can sense a coach is maybe there for himself or trying to better himself in this profession, you know, that you'd steer clear. Who can help you get to your goal and reach your dream, no question, but who's going to be there for you even if things don't go well? And if you don't make it, who's going to be in your corner? So that's really important, and that's my message. You know, I can talk to these young men, and I can explain to them that I have no interest. I'm not riding them to my next job. I've coached for a number of years, but I can hopefully give them honest feedback, and that'll help them because there's nothing in it for me. I'm not trying to gain something and get something in my back pocket for it. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people do, but smart players will see through that.
Yeah, the money aspect, I want to get into that for just a second, and that is the fact that we're in an arms war. I don't think there's any doubt about that when it comes to college athletics, because more and more money is coming in as we have new technologies, new distribution systems. There's going to be more money coming into it, and everybody's trying to get their portion of it. And I think it sends the wrong message, and it dictates the wrong things when it comes to college sports. We have certainly, and I've heard it all over the country, about people saying, I used to go to college football games in the afternoon, but they're not on in the afternoons anymore because television TV, dictates.
Television, exactly.
And that's tied into also about the athlete. I mean, they help generate all this money, but they can't get anything from it, even in a subsidiary way. If they use the picture of the athlete on a mug or something, the athlete doesn't get anything.
No, Ron, you're right. Again, going back to my Cal days, I got in an argument with our athletic director because I didn't want to play in a TV game that would have put our players on the road from Tuesday through Sunday, and then they would have then come back for classes Monday, maybe, if they got up in the morning. I said, that's the wrong thing. I'd rather not be on TV, our university not collect that money so we can do what's right by the student athletes. And that's a promise I made those young men when I recruited them. And, you know, at the time our athletic director either was under pressure or needed more revenue. And I understand that, but her job, was to raise money. And so she didn't make that decision at the time to, I think, do what was right by the student athlete. And it bothered me. And so, you know, we had disagreements and I understand athletic directors today have to do what's right. They have a multi-tier job. They have to raise money. But you also have to remember who's driving this. As you said, the student-athletes aren't getting much in return. The least you can do is make sure they get to class, they're healthy. You know, we had injuries take place because our athletes were on the road playing back-to-back games, not much time of recuperation. And, you know, so I think if you always keep the student-athlete and these young men in the right way, you know, treat them the right way, you're going to get something in return. But unfortunately, that's what's happening today. So a lot of athletes are saying, hey, I want to get mine if I'm going to be – you know, use my likeness. My likeness is going to be used. I want to get some of that. If I'm going to be part of this TV money is going to be used. But, you know, we'll talk about it maybe on another time. But athletes today, you know, they probably should be some type of compensation, at least for incidentals, things that can help them, you know, that they can't go out and work for a living. But do I think they should be paid players or hired guns? No. But I think today they should, you know, I think they should be able to meet college costs, no question. But I'm glad you asked that. It's a very good question.
We've got about 2 minutes left. If you had to crystal ball where college athletics / college basketball might be in 10 years, what might we see?
Well, I'm hoping you're going to see what I just mentioned before, you know, everybody getting to the tournament, having a true college champion. I see that. You know, I don't think we should have the haves and have-nots in college basketball. Why tell a kid that if he's a Division I player, he's made it? If he's not, he's not. You're saying Division II is not important, even though you have scholarships, Division III, which you have great academic schools. Those aren't important. I'd like to see it where, you know, college basketball is esteemed and the experience is what's important. Don't define success on who's on TV, who's getting the money, who's exposed. You know, college sports should be enjoyed for the purity of what it is. And there's nothing like college basketball. And it doesn't just have to be the Final Four. If you don't make it to the Final Four, you know, coaches are getting fired now. I mean, I used to think that our team's making it. We've been to a couple Sweet 16s. We didn't get to a Final Four. That bothered me, Ron. And I started to say, wait a minute, I'm no less a coach because we didn't get to a Final Four, and our teams were no less a players because we didn't get to a Final Four. Is with the right, you know, Ed Gray doesn't get injured, we're probably playing in a Final Four back at Cal or Leon Poe or something, and we didn't have him when he was injured. So just define yourself and you know, by your deeds and what you do, and look at college basketball. I want to see the purity of the game come back, because it really should be about that, the purity of the game of, whether it's basketball or just college football on a Saturday afternoon. That should be really, it shouldn't be about, is it on TV and who's making money and who's ranked. You know, you should be able to enjoy a game and not know who's ranked and who's favored, and, you know, get the betting out of this. People are betting on games now. That's just horrible for the game. It should be outlawed, betting on college, on amateurs playing this sport.
Ben, I want to thank you. This has been an insightful and stimulating conversation that I know a lot of people will listen to and they'll talk about. And I want to thank you. You're welcome in the studio anytime.
No, listen, my pleasure. Your history in this show obviously speaks for itself, Ron. What you've done to get sports enthusiasts and people on this show has been great. I'm just honored that you have me here, and I'll be glad to come back anytime.
Great. Ben once said, could I still coach and do I still have coaching in my blood? Yes. But what I'm doing now is coaching. Because it's teaching. It's very gratifying, and that says it all. We've got you on Sports Byline.